Blog Talk Radio.
In today's society, finding a job can be difficult at best. The economy, still in recovery mode, makes it even more challenging for minority job candidates to get ahead. Today we'll talk with former Houston Oilers pro football player turned corporate readiness executive coach David Davis on the inside track for getting and keeping a job in today's tight job market. Preparedness is the name of the game for greater recruitment and retention efforts. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. We're glad that you are here today. I'm not sure when you're listening to this program. Some are listening live, some are online in our chat room, and others will be listening later on. But we hope the weather is certainly cooperating in your neck of the woods. We've had quite an ordeal here in Massachusetts. We were glued to our television sets watching what was taking place in Joplin, Missouri, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, hundreds of miles away from Massachusetts. Little did we realize that last night we would also be hit. And so for all of our friends and colleagues and people that we know, loved ones in western Massachusetts, Munson, in towns like Springfield, Massachusetts, and all in that corridor who were plummeted last night by up to seven tornado touchdowns, we certainly hope that they are now in a safe place and that their families were not severely impacted. We know that four people were killed. There is devastation in the town of Springfield, which is a very large city, but the downtown area unfortunately got the brunt of the tornado, and there's lots of damage. I know of someone's pastor whose house was destroyed in Springfield, and others. There are memorial services and vigils going on as we speak, so we just send our love out to everyone, not just in western Massachusetts, but certainly throughout the United States, the Tornado Alley Corridor, the family of Will Norton in Joplin, Missouri, people in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, all in the area that's been affected by tornadoes, floods, and all of the other natural disasters that we don't want to come our way. So our prayers go out to each and every person in that area. We're also excited because my son-in-law's new book is selling like a clip. Playtime to Bedtime is the name of the book. It's a perfect, perfect book to read to your children, especially if you are a dad, to read to your children during Father's Day. So as a great gift item, it's a wonderful type of publication to purchase. It doesn't take that long to read, but it's a memorable story that we hope that you will have an opportunity to get a copy of. You can go to playtimetobedtime.com and pick up a copy, and I'm very excited because Jerome Farquharson, my son-in-law, will be my special guest next week talking about the book. Well, for many of you, you're still out there. Maybe you're still celebrating from graduation. You've had a great time in school, and now the rubber is meeting the road, and you've got to find a job. Or you're looking for work, and you've been out there for a while. Or you're trying to change the position. I'm excited because I'm bringing on board today an expert, a corporate readiness expert, who has done a very unique job of sort of mixing up the importance of corporate readiness with education and athletics, and I'm happy to bring on board former Houston Oilers player and also former national trainer for En-ROADS, David Davis. Welcome to the show, David.
Oh, thank you for having me, Carol.
Well, you're pretty busy these days. We had a chat before you came on the line, before the show went live. And tell us, what's the marketplace like out there from your vantage point?
Well, the marketplace is what it is, you know, what you hear in the media and for the people out there pounding the pavement who found it very difficult. It is very, I'm not going to say dismal, because there are some opportunities out there for, and I'll speak directly for minorities, but a lot of times we're not ready to take those opportunities or prepared for those opportunities. And so that limits the opportunities even more for a lot of minorities.
Tell us about that. I was intrigued by this. I'm also intrigued by the fact that you're a corporate readiness coach. When you say we're not prepared, now I'm thinking about particularly young people. You've been in En-ROADS. En-ROADS were a very good client of mine for many years. I know En-ROADS spends lots of time preparing young people when they're leaving high school, going to college, and then ultimately going to that dream job. Parents are spending tons of money educating young people. They're trade schools, vocational schools. What's the deal with young people not being ready, David?
Well, a lot of it has to do with, I call it honest ignorance a lot of times, because we don't know the three main focal parts of getting a job, and that is corporate resume development, corporate impression management, and also corporate interviewing skills. A lot of minorities haven't been privy to a lot of that corporate etiquette knowledge a lot of times. But then again, it's our fault for not seeking that knowledge on our own also. So what I do in my workshops to college students all across the United States is in the corporate resume development part, I teach them first and foremost we have to do away with some of our, and I say our, when I'm talking to minority students, I tell them I'm that uncle who's going to tell them what they need to hear instead of what they need to know. And I say that we're all play cousins right now. So what we need to do first and foremost is get rid of our email addresses that have, you know, pimpinainteasy@hotmail.com and little mama, I got your man at Yahoo, because that first and foremost will distract the corporate HR people from even further wanting to look at your resume.
So what I'm hearing is that there are a lot of people, and again, you're an insider, the HR departments are probably going online, doing Google searches, and finding where people are on Facebook. MySpace is not as popular now as it was a couple of years ago, but certainly MySpace and some of the other, YouTube as well. And so these cute names don't work in corporate settings.
Right. Not only the cute names on your resume, but you touched upon the Facebook issue. Too many times, you know, some employers will actually, during the interview, say, hey, let's take a look at your Facebook page.
Ooh.
And that goes to your ethics and your morality more so than anything. You know, if you have your friends or you have certain pictures up on Facebook that look like some of your friends just stepped out of the Garden of Eden actually before the fig leaves, then that might not be a good fit ethically or from a moral standpoint for their company. Mm. So the social media does come into play. But also just small things we take for granted, like the phone numbers. If I, as an employer, look at your resume and want to talk to you and call your cell phone and I hear music, I'm going to hang up because I didn't call you to listen to music. I tell students on my phone right now in my iTunes, I have everything literally from Garth Brooks to Lil Wayne. But then again, I didn't call you to listen to it. If you can't take 15 to 20 seconds out of your busy day to say, hi, I can't come to the phone right now, please leave your name and number at the sound of the tone, and I'll be glad to get back in contact with you. Have a good day. Then I'm going to think a red flag is going to go up then. So personalize your messages. Even more so, take it a step further. If you put a phone number on there that somebody else can answer besides yourself, out of respect, tell those people, look, somebody may be calling to offer me a job.
Right.
You know, answer the phone with some respect and some sense about you.
What's going on? Or somebody's calling, by actually answering the phone where you're really sleepy and you can hear that they've been up all night when they answer the phone.
All night. You're exactly right. So little things like that on a resume, the formatting of a resume is important because HR people, they want to see one page, but they want to see hard-hitting facts and bullets. They don't want to read a lot. But too many times our resumes are not formatted, and then Lord knows if we don't do the spell check and grammatical errors, something as small as making sure that your action verbs, that your jobs are in the right tense, either past tense or current tense, things like that, because a lot of HR people nowadays are English majors. And I tell students, a lot of these people who are English majors, they're sadistic. They'll read your resume, mark it up with a red pen, and then throw it away. So you want to make sure that you cover all your bases as far as your resume is concerned. The second part of it all that sometimes we have honest ignorance about is our impression management, especially what we should wear to the interview. And I'll take it a step back, Carol. When I go on these college campuses, and even when I was with En-ROADS, I would go on campus about 2 hours early to get a feel and sense of the population of students that I'm going to be dealing with later that night. And if I, you know, I see people, I say us, I see a lot of minority students walking around with, the ladies walking around with pajama bottoms on and bunny shoes, house shoes, you know, skin, revealing a lot of their skin with their with their tops and stuff. And then the guys, of course, with the 75% sag working, you know, it's, perception is reality a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And as a corporate employer, I that's not what I want. So you've eliminated yourself from a position already.
You know, you made a really good point. You're actually, you're getting to your location early to set up, just to get a feel for things. I'm sure that there are lots of job fairs going on all over the country.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon for an HR person to get to the site early to set up. Mm-hmm. So if they see someone, as you're saying, in the with the pajama bottoms on and the bunny shoes, which happens on a lot of campuses,
they
recognize that same face 2 hours later, the impression certainly is going to be sort of focused on what happened 2 hours prior to that job fair starting.
Totally agree. Perception is kind of diminished based on what they've seen earlier. Even when you're sitting in class, we're not asking you to wear the most expensive clothes on earth, but it's how you wear those clothes.
Mm-hmm.
In class, those professors that you're in front of, they may have to write reference letters for you, or an employer will go behind your back and ask that professor, how is so-and-so in your class?
Mm-hmm.
And the professor will give them an honest opinion about what they see and have dealt with in that class. So that's the impression management part. And then even at the interview, you know, guys need to know they need to wear dark suits, and females also, either pants or skirt suits. And then females need to wear a blouse, actually, under their jacket and not a lace like a camisole or a teddy under there. They need to wear an actual blouse. But, you know, I have interviews with guys where they come in with the six-button suits on and the now or later colors, you know, and it's just not appropriate for interviews.
So let me ask you this, because there are a lot of things that HR professionals and interviewers can't ask.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sitting up there making an impression based on the young people, in this case, or the interviewees who are sitting in front of them. So what I'm hearing you saying is that you're trying to counter that impression, that negative impression that can work against someone who's looking for a job. Isn't that right, David?
Right. You're exactly right. I tell young minority students, if you're that strong or strong-minded to keep this persona about you, I tell them this: you need to play that role to get what you want, and in the end, you play them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, if they want you to dress a certain way or sit down a certain way at the job or the interview, you do that to get that job, but you don't have to lose who you are and what you stand for in the process. And in the end, you have actually played them.
Hmm. What is it like for, again, these are these undiscussable, hidden thoughts that are going on in the minds of decision makers when they're hiring people? Two things, David. How does someone, a young professional, someone who's looking for a job, get around their name if their name is ethnically focused? And get around the zip code that they live in, the zip code that is associated with, let's say, an urban area that may or may not evoke conversation with people. How can you get around those kind of stereotypes that can work against a candidate?
Good question, and I answer that. I tell students, if a company is actually basing you and judging you based on your name or where you live, then that probably in the end will not be a good company to work for. Because something will, it won't be a very good placement for you if a company has that mindset. So it is almost to the prospective employee's advantage not to go work for that company. That company is doing them a favor by not interviewing them based on their name or their zip code. But then again, the zip code should not matter, because I personally think of we should not allow where we come from to dictate who we are. But, you know, we have some students who will just use initials a lot of times in their first and middle name. You know, I have it myself. You know, my initials are DDD. But I would not put, just my full name on there, because I hear it all the time. I hear all the jokes about, you know, being 3D and all that stuff. But sometimes a lot of students and other professionals will use initials for their first and last name, first and middle name, but they have to put their last name on there. But you got to remember, the ethnicity part sometimes can be used to your advantage because the diversity is what they want. Exactly. If you have an ethnically diverse name,
too.
You're exactly right. And that stuff can play in your favor. So don't be ashamed of it. But then again, don't be hesitant to use it because it can be used in your advantage.
I want to mix this up a bit. We're talking to David Davis. He's an expert in the field of corporate readiness. He's worked with many young people through En-ROADS, has a professional sports background. Talk to us about the relationship between, you played for the Houston Oilers. You've been connected with the Denver Nuggets. And so you've been around that world. You know, sports is definitely a part of your background. What is the connection that you see between sports, athletic abilities, and corporate readiness?
Oh, they're one and alike. Because what I tell students a lot of times is that, as I said before, I'm sadistic. I will go in and talk to a corporation and say, hey, what do you look for in a full-time employee or an intern? And all the adjectives and characteristics that they use, the words that they use to describe a perfect employee or intern, they all describe what an athlete is. They want someone that's hardworking, disciplined, takes constructive criticism well, learns from their losses, competes. Those are all athletic qualities and traits, and that's what corporate wants. So if you innately have these things in you, I'm not saying the athletic ability physically, running, jumping, tackling, hitting a ball, but mentally, you have to bring or let it be known that you have those athletic traits about you from a mental standpoint, because that's exactly what they're looking for, especially if you have played sports and have been a captain of a team, a champion, of course, yada, yada, yada. They look for this stuff because that's something that they can't teach employees. They can take the leadership, the competitiveness, the winning attitude, and teach you a job. But then again, they can't give you a job and then teach you how to be a leader, teach you how to be competitive. So when you bring that to the table, that's to your advantage.
So, that can certainly be a trait or a characteristic that people have and can nurture and cultivate on the job, and certainly can do a lot of practice before they get to the job. What about young persons, professionals who are already in the marketplace or seasoned veterans? How do you handle the salary question? And I'm saying that because so many young people now are heavily in debt when they graduate from college. Uh-huh. We have all these graduations going on this week, last week, the next week or so, and you graduate to debt. So how do you handle the ideal corporate position that you want, where maybe you think you're worth $100,000, but the job is only going to pay $43,500?
Well, that's a great question, Carol, but the way to answer that is going into that interview or when you applied for that job, you knew what the salary range was, or you should know
the salary range. Well, some people may not know. Yeah, they may assume.
That's the very first question they should ask. Hey, I've seen this job posting for this electrical engineer position. Could you tell me what's the salary range for it?
So you don't think you'd blow a job by asking that question up front?
No, not up front at all, because, again, you may be wasting your time if you think that it's not something that's comparable to what you spent on your education or the experience that you can bring to that job. And then, again, you're not wasting your time or the employer's time. But in most cases, more than not, the employers who post the jobs, HR people, they already have a salary range either posted or in mind. Even after you do the interview, if this were a full-time job, there's nothing wrong with you asking at the end of the interview. I didn't see a posting on the job site or description about the salary. Could you might tell me what's the range for this particular position? There's nothing wrong with asking at the end of the interview.
And with a job candidate, if they have a particular salary range that is really in their budget frame, where they've got to make a certain amount of money in order to pay all their bills and take care of their college fund, college loans, et cetera, and they see this job and it it is, let's say, $25,000 or $30,000 less than what they had anticipated. How should someone handle a situation like that, especially if they're coming across as a very strong candidate?
Okay, good question. And the way to answer that is, going in, did you have a job already? So are you saying that you're going to continue to have nothing instead of accepting a $45,000 job when you think it should be 70, but they're only giving you 45? What are you going to do, keep having nothing or take this $45,000 job? And actually, it could be just a case to get your foot into the door to bigger and better things. And also, the best time to look for a job is when you have a job.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you may want to consider that $45,000 a year job because you have nothing now in order to get your foot in the door and look for better things. But also, it's not all predicated on the salary. Sometimes you have to look at the benefits that come along with that job. Mm-hmm. I tell students, you can get a $45,000 a year job that has benefits that will equal up to a $70,000 a year job, mm-hmm. and that would be a lot better, especially for students, if they have that instead of maybe a $60,000 job with terrible benefits or
mm-hmm.
none.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to weigh the balances when it comes to that.
And what about for women? There's a news broadcaster on television right now who shockingly found out that she's making significantly less than the men who are on the same show with her. And this happens over and over again in the workplace. What advice do you give, David Davis, to women to really get the price that they're looking for when they're on this job interview?
Well, you know, we have to separate what we're actually looking for and actually what is out there. And sometimes that can deter us or hurt us from getting good jobs also, because we may have a thought about what we're worth, but then again, what is actually offered or out there for us is key. Now, when it comes to women, the big issue is, you know, and it's being brought up more and more nowadays, is the pay that's not equal to the salaries of men in the same jobs or equal jobs.
And
one thing, you know, that is something that you can do. Now, I tell everybody, sometimes you have to pick and choose your battles, especially when you're working in corporate. Depending on how long you've been there, how good your name is, you know, your tenure. Those are questions that you shouldn't hesitate to ask someone in HR. Or I don't know if it's public knowledge of that company's, you know, salaries that they pay. And you may see that a guy who has the same title as you making $10,000 more,
which happens.
That is fair game as far as questions to HR on why. But then again, you have to do your homework. How long has that person been there? You know, what other experience, background, or education did they bring to the job that you didn't? You just can't base your theory on nothing. You have to go in with some bullets, you know.
And in addition to going in with the bullets, I also think that women have to step up to the game. So often women just accept. They just say, okay, the salary is going to be $34,000.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. They sign on the dotted line, and they work overtime, whereas the guys are out there playing golf, making $50,000 for the same job. So it's a matter of women asserting themselves so that they realize their value, and they're communicating that value to the people they're negotiating with.
Totally agree, and Carol, that's a great point. And what anybody should do, not just women, before you accept a job, you research stuff like that. You know, you after the interview, that they call you back and say, "Hey, Carol, we'd like to offer you this job, and here's the salary." There is nothing wrong with you say, "Hey, can you give me a day or two? I want to run it by my family, whatever the case may be." But it buys you a couple of days to research what these salaries are, you know, paid to other people in that same position, not only at that particular company, but out there across the United States in the same market.
Now, what about, we've been talking, we're talking to David Davis, a corporate readiness expert. We've been talking primarily about younger college graduate, young people, young adults who are going into the workplace. What about someone who is older, who has been out there, and they suddenly find themselves out of work because of layoffs that are taking place within their corporations? I know people that are going through that right now who are going through that.
Uh-huh.
What advice would you give them, in addition to just the traditional preparedness, when you look at your resume development, impressions, and interview skills, what specific advice would you give an older potential job candidate when they're out there pounding the pavement?
That's a great question. What I would do, and my advice to them, is to make sure that they attend workshops or talk to somebody about the landscape of HR, human resources, compared to now as to what it was when they entered the job market. Because some people have been in the same job for 10 to 20 years, and the landscape of HR has changed. And they haven't caught up with the times as far as knowing what the ins and outs of resumes, interviewing, and what they should wear, because all of that stuff has changed. And sometimes it's going to take a reinvention of yourself in order to go out and find that other job. It's also an opportune time if you have the ability to take maybe 2 to 4 weeks to sit down and reflect on how to reinvent yourself and what exactly do you want to get back into as far as a career is concerned. Because I tell people, you don't want to look for a job, you want to look for a career. You know, you like a job, you love a career. And so I tell people to look for careers, but for the older, non-traditional people out there who are looking for jobs, I would tell them, take time out, attend workshops, research online on how to reinvent yourself. And then again, of course, the biggest one is how the landscape of human resources has changed when it comes to hiring.
You know, what really concerns me, because I know people who have lost their jobs, no fault of their own, but just things happen, and companies reorganize, and they've been on the job for a number of years. And what I think they get lulled, now I'm an entrepreneur, so I know I have to hustle every day. There's nothing I do. Nobody's going to give me anything. So what I see is that so often they get caught up into the lull of unemployment. They're receiving unemployment payments, which can go on for quite some time, and they're not necessarily sharpening up their skills, maybe taking a class at a community college or, as you're saying, going to workshops or conferences where they can stay in the loop. They're not in the loop. Their name is not in the loop, and it becomes even that much harder for them to get employment.
Right, and that's a great point also. And what they have to realize is that you try to tell yourself to be mentally strong in times like that, because if you let your emotions come into play and it puts you in a bad place, and it can keep you there for a long period of time. Like you said, man, I don't have a job, you know, woe is me. No, you pick yourself up by the bootstraps and find ways, like I said, to reinvent yourself and to continue to get your name out there. Social media is a great way to get your name out there in a positive way. And, you know, I have an old saying, it's not what you know, but who you know. But sometimes it's best who knows you.
Who knows you, that's
so
right.
Call those people. It makes no difference if you know a million people, but do they know you is the biggest question. And then again, there's nothing wrong with calling upon those people who you know you have a good name with and who knows you to either ask them, hey, your friends are the best resources to find jobs nowadays, but sometimes our pride won't allow us to pick up the phone and tell that friend, man, I lost my job, I need some help. Can you put my name out there or tell your boss, something like that.
All about networking, and you really, really well. We're going to give your phone number out, 407-687-0048.
And also my email address.
Yes, give that to us.
Coach David Davis, that's all one word, lowercase, coachdaviddavis@gmail.com.
Well, I'm sure you're probably going to get a couple of emails. We've had people in the chat room, and there are going to be others who will be listening to this show. Great, great advice, focusing on impressions that you make and interviewing skills. We've been talking to David Davis, who is a corporate readiness coach and has given great advice in this marketplace that is edging forward, but it's not quite there, so stay tuned, do your research, do your homework, be prepared, and even when you're on the job, make sure that you build networks with other people outside of your normal circle of friends, because you never know what's going to happen. David, thank you so much for being a guest on my program, and I wish you the very best, and I hope that you keep on the move and help people out with all the things you're doing. Great.
Well, thank you very much, Carol, for having me on your show, and I look forward to hearing from your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. All right. We hope everybody has enjoyed this show. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week. And we'll talk soon. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas signing off.